This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, glad you could be with us here on a throwback Thursday. It is Wake Up Call, SportsMap Radio. Hey, you can hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Spell it that way, or that's the way he gets it. So hit us up there. We've got the Masters update for you. It is underway slash not underway at Augusta because rain has delayed the opening round. It's raining pretty good there. This morning, if you saw any of the video of players on the practice team before the tee-off, yeah, it was pouring. So they have delayed the opening round of the Masters. Yes, I hope the rain subsides at some point and we get this tournament in. I don't care. I'm at this point now. I'm glad it's just being played. I'm glad 2020 has given us the Masters, even in November. But rain is in the forecast all week, so it could be a problem with delays and trying to get rounds in and maybe a round and a half to tomorrow to make it up. All of those things are still on the table as we play through the weekend. Tonight, Tennessee and the Indianapolis Colts on Thursday Night Football. The Titans lead the Colts by one game in the AFC South. I don't know if this is going to be an epic matchup, an epic battle, but as we get closer and closer to the end, it's nice to sort of see sort of where teams are and where they're going. We are at the halfway point. You do get a pullback a little bit because of the extra playoff team now in each conference, that these aren't must-win games at these points. You don't want to get the division too far away, but you can still be, you know, still be in a contention situation. And I like the way the Titans bounced back. They lost two games in a row. Didn't, you know, had a field goal miss against the Steelers and then came right back the next week and lost to the Cincinnati Bengals. So they were struggling a bit, and then they kind of beat the Bears to sort of end that streak. And the Indianapolis Colts, a team I mentioned earlier, is a team I'm not 100% sure I know anything about. I think they are capable of pulling off some really good wins where they look good. And then offensively, they struggle just enough with Phillip Rivers, who still throws interceptions. He still has the ability to move you down the field, but he does have that turnover that kills him. Defensively, though, they're really good. They're strong defensively. Whether or not they'll stop Derrick Henry, we'll see tonight. We've got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up. Brian Westbrook, former running back of the Eagles, is going to join us. We'll talk about the season so far in the NFL, what he likes for the second half of this year, what he's liked in the first half of this year. It's all coming up as Hour 2 rolls on the SportsMap Radio Network. It's Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, the dumb. As we get it on the Throwback Thursday. And by the way, 1990 on our Throwback Thursday, this date on the Monday Night Football matchup between Washington and Philadelphia. Eagles won 28-14, but that's not why we put it in Throwback Thursday. It was the body bag game where Buddy Ryan said they'll have to be carted off in body bags. Famously made that point. And that's on this date in 1990, 30 years ago. All right, what is the good of the day, Mr. Culver?
The good of the day is, you know, and cue Jeff Goldblum saying life finds a way.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Life finds a way. New Mexico. New Mexico. It's the University of New Mexico, not New Mexico.
Is it
State.
The Lobos?
It's the Lobos.
Okay, yes.
Are going to play an all FBS road schedule.
Oh, so they're not playing one game at home this
year, huh?
They're
not playing one game at home because New Mexico as a state has decided, you know what, no football games due to COVID.
Right.
So they packed up and said, okay, and they moved to Vegas.
Oh, okay. So they're playing like their Nevada game in Vegas, and
no, they're just playing all the teams they're going to play at their stadium, their home stadium. So they're going to have an all road schedule.
Okay, hold on one second. So they have a home game scheduled for this weekend against Nevada, but that's not going to be in Albuquerque. That is going to be in Vegas.
I don't know if it's going to be in Vegas or if it actually will be in Reno.
Or Reno. Okay, yeah. So Nevada, the whole state.
They're not playing any games in New Mexico because New Mexico said no.
Well, okay, so they would play against Wyoming at Wyoming, and I'm looking at their schedule now. So at Fresno State instead. So they would not. They would go. No, that's it. We'll play at your joint.
Yeah,
that's cool.
It'll be the first team to ever do that. The reason why it's good, you know, I mean, yeah, I'm not trying to put, you know, make light of COVID. I agree that it's very serious. But like you were saying in the opening monologue this morning, you know, I mean, what's the alternative?
Yeah. It's that or nothing. Just give them opportunities to try.
They're just wanting to get out there. They want to play. They want to get a season in. They're staying in a, was it the Hyatt in Las Vegas?
Well,
Hilton Lake Las Vegas Resort and Spa. So, I mean, for these kids, that's
great.
Fantastic.
Are you kidding? That's fantastic. Look, here's the thing. Are we seeing here's the question that I think people need to ask and again, I'm going after those media types that are like, we told you so. Are people getting COVID because they're playing college football? No, there's no evidence to support that whatsoever. What there is evidence of is kids being kids, college kids being college kids, they're getting COVID and bringing it to the football team. Nick Saban was very reluctant to let his team go home for the Halloween break. But he did it anyway. He said, I didn't want to tell them they couldn't, so he did it anyway. There was a lot of schools like that where they went out, saw family, got the virus, brought it to the team. So to me, it's either one of the – look, the kids that are getting COVID – would have gotten COVID. They're not getting COVID because they're playing football. They're getting COVID because they're interacting with other students and they're getting COVID. So at least the sport is trying to play games with that reality in mind. They're not canceling games because they know the kids are going to get it mingled in with the other students. They're saying, look, if we can, we'll play. If we can't, we won't. And that's better than just going, yeah. No.
And they found a partner in UNLV. UNLV is sharing stadium time with them. They don't fight or they don't face UNLV at all this season.
Yeah.
But the two of them have joked that, either one of them has a game canceled, they can just play each other.
That's right. Good. That's great. So, good for New Mexico.
They found a way. And the main reason for this is because, you know, they're expecting to profit about $4 million this season.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, too, right? I mean, look, you may look at these schedules and go, oh, God, there's still some money that has to be made out there. It really is.
Now, they will end up spending about $300,000 on hotels.
Yeah.
But, you know, as one mathematician pointed out, earning about $3.7 million is better than earning zero.
Yeah, exactly. And making cuts and firing people and canceling other things.
Or, having a player who... leaves.
Yeah. You know, that's right.
Who knows? I mean, I don't know if it's probably too late in the season to do that now, but that was a thing going on for a while. Where
in the beginning of the season, you're right.
Yeah. You know, it's like, oh, you're not going to play? Well, I'm going to take my talents here because I need film.
I need to play. I need film. If you're not going to play, I'll find a place where it is played. Yeah, you're right. During the summer, that was a big story.
Yeah.
That was a big story. So, yeah. All right. What's the bad of the day then?
Joe Burrow.
Joe Burrow's in the bad?
Yeah.
What happened to Joe Burrow?
Really,
my man.
I really like him. He admitted something that I don't know if I'm willing to get behind.
All right, let's go.
I'll have you listen.
I was scared of everything growing up. I still don't like scary movies. I don't like haunted houses or anything like that. But, you know, I couldn't watch Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, House. I was like strictly a SpongeBob, Disney Channel, Nickelodeon kind of guy.
He couldn't watch Harry Potter?
It's too scary.
That was too scary for him?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
See, I don't know if you want to admit that as a starting NFL quarterback.
No, not really. Because what do you think some of these players will be like? Boy, I'll tell you right now. Well, that he who won't be named, he is a frightening guy. But I don't know if I want to take on some of these guys in the league. Like TJ Watt coming at you is probably a lot more scary than Voldemort.
Yeah. Or Lord of the Rings. I mean, was that
Lord of the Rings?
Was that really scary?
That wasn't really scary. It was dark, you know, obviously with the goblins and things, but I don't think it was frightening.
I don't remember it being scary. Like, oh,
right.
Well, same thing. I don't remember Harry. My kids will watch Harry Potter with me.
Yeah. Here's the problem with us and Harry Potter, though. You and I were adults when it came out. So we already gone through our youth phase. Right. Okay, so when Harry Potter came out, it wasn't scary to us. Joe Burrow was Joe Burrow even born when the first one came out?
Oh, don't say that. We're not going to go down that road.
No, the first one came out, I think, in 2000, 2001. So he was probably a baby or at least a young toddler when the first one came out. So the whole time that those movies were coming out, he was a little kid.
He was born in 96. So he would have been five.
Yeah. No, I did this for full disclosure. I did this with Poltergeist. Remember with Craig T. Nelson?
Yes.
And Heather O'Rourke, I think, was a little girl. So when I was a kid, I saw Poltergeist on Laserdisc. I must have been 10, 8 or 9, 10, around that time. and I saw Poltergeist, and I was petrified of it. Like the tree that came into the bedroom and grabbed the kid and tried to eat him.
Yep.
And then the run to the light, Carrie Ann, that little woman, the psychic woman. And then they pulled the monster out of the light. I was petrified of that movie. Then I watched it again as an adult, and I was like, yeah, those same feelings came back, but I'm an adult now, right? So they sort of suppress it. So it's like, okay, all right. If I was an adult, I don't think I would have found this scary. I would have found this, all right, suspenseful, but I wouldn't have found it scary. Maybe Burrow is like, that seemed scary to me as a four-year-old or a five-year-old, so I just stayed away from it my whole life.
No.
Does that make sense?
No, I tried.
I tried to do the psychological thing. And it
you're
doesn't
trying
no.
to back him up, but I mean,
I didn't
honestly,
land it.
Okay, here's the deal, right? I would understand if you said I'm not a big fan of scary movies. You know, I didn't watch Scream growing up, or you know, any of the Friday the 13th or Nightmare on Elm Street movies. I get that; those are scary movies.
Those are scary movies. Yeah,
I can't put Harry Potter in the same genre, even for you, like even mentioning Poltergeist. How is Harry Potter in the same genre
sure,
as Poltergeist?
That's true. That's true.
Come
Good
on.
Point. It's part of the sci-fi fantasy more genre.
Especially that first movie. That first movie is just a kid movie.
It's fun. He's like eight, all right, or nine. What old do you need to be a wizard to go to 10? Okay, 10. He's 10.
Remember, he just turned 10.
He's just turned 10.
Dumbledore brought the cake.
That's right. So he's a 10-year-old. It's seen through the eyes of a 10-year-old.
Yes.
How frightening could that possibly
sure,
be?
I'm sure the movies get darker as you go on, but that first one is just a kid's movie.
You know, you brought
it's
up...
a kid's adventure film. Come on.
You brought up Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
To this day, even after all of these years, whenever I'm super tired, you ever been like where you need to lay down?
Yes.
Where your brain is like, we are shutting down any second now, so you better find a place to lay down. I still think I would die in Nightmare on Elm Street. My brain still goes to that point. I would not make it a Nightmare on Elm Street.
Probably.
Whenever
probably
I'm like,
right.
When I tell my wife, I'm like, I gotta go lay down. I'm beat. I'm so tired. I always think, yep, this is when Freddy Krueger would get me because I'd just give in to the temptation and be like, I'm sleeping. I'm done.
Going back to Joe Burrow here, I get maybe saying this is kind of fun. You know, it's like, oh, here's a little something you guys didn't know about me. But like you had mentioned right away, the defense is going to eat this up.
Sure.
You know, I mean, all he watched was SpongeBob or Disney and Nickelodeon.
Right,
I mean,
exactly.
Imagine the jokes that are to come out of that.
Yeah,
as
exactly.
Well, I was like, come on. I don't know. I don't know if I want my star quarterback to admit that.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day is the definition of insanity.
All right, okay.
And when you look up the definition of insanity, there will probably be a picture of Kevin Cash.
Kevin Cash.
Yep. Here's
Tampa
what,
Bay Rays.
He just recently won AL Manager of the Year.
He did.
He was interviewed, was asked a question, and gave this response.
I would make the same decision again. I just hope for a much better outcome. And that's, you know, being so respectful of everybody's opinion that's out there. But, that's what we do. And we pride ourselves on getting the most, favorable matchups possible. And in that moment, thought that was the best matchup.
So he's still defending his decision to take Blake yes. Snell out of the game in the World Series.
Yes.
When Snell was pitching a gem.
Yes.
And at the moment he pulled Blake Snell, the Dodgers were celebrating in the other dugout.
Yes.
So he's still on the fence. Not on the fence. He's still on the horse of this was the right decision at the time and I'm sticking by it.
Correct, sir.
No remorse. No like, you know, now that I got some hindsight, I probably would have thought about this, and this.
May have not walked out to the mound, maybe have sent the pitching coach out to the mound just to say, you know, can you go gauge his feelings?
Is he nervous that if he said he made a mistake, it would lessen the I won the AL Manager of the Year award impact?
I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't know how those two would correlate.
I always want honesty from guys, and I know I don't always get it. In all the interviews that I do, I know I don't always get honesty. I always get a spin and I, you know, whatnot. And I that's part of the deal when you cover sports. But that might be an honest answer. You know what I mean? Like that
might be
in his world and mind. He just really needs to. If I'm the Rays management, like I'm not going to fire him. He led my team to the World Series, I do want to pull back and go. If this guy is willing to take this to the furthest place, like even after realizing he made a mistake, everyone realizes he made a mistake, but him, that might say more about him than if he had come out and said, you know, I blew it. I made a mistake.
Find me one person who agrees with Kevin
Cash.
Nobody. You know what? Yeah. Pulling Snell at that moment. That was a great, you can't have Snell go up against Betts, Seager, and Turner one more time?
Yeah, that's a good question. If you're an owner of a team, would you rather have your manager or coach admit they made a mistake or ride to the ends of the earth saying that that was still the right call?
Let's remember, he was afraid that these three guys were going to come up and face Snell again.
Right.
All Snell had done was strike him out both times he had faced all three of them.
I know.
Those three guys were 0-6 with six strikeouts against Snell in that game.
Yeah, that's right.
You pull them. And like I said, that the very next day, like I said, at least he didn't have to wait long to see what, you know, how his decision panned out.
How it happened, exactly.
Because, I mean, like, what, maybe the second or third pitch, Betts doubles down the line?
That's right.
Done. Game was over.
All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb. Brian Westbrook, a former Eagles running back, is going to join us coming up in 15 minutes. We'll talk to him about the NFL season so far, what his likes and what he doesn't like about what's going on in the league. And that's all coming up as we continue with Wake Up Call.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't compromise your visibility with streaks or smearing on your windows when it's time to replace your wiper blades. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see their selection. The professional parts people help you find just the right wiper blades for your vehicle. O'Reilly Auto Parts will install your wiper blades free of charge. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Masters update, it's been delayed due to weather. Only six groups made it out on the course before they went, this is not going to work. We're done. So we'll see where it goes today and what that leads to this weekend with rain coming in the forecast for Augusta National.
Rumor has it DeChambeau's in the gym.
Yeah, he went right to the gym.
Yep.
We were talking before the show. DeChambeau had a 7:55 Eastern tee time.
No, 7:30.
7:30 tee time?
Yeah.
Was it really that early?
Yeah, 7:33 Eastern time.
So I thought to myself, if you're a professional golfer, what time do you get to the course with a 7:30 tee time?
And it probably depends. I mean, if you're John Daly, 7:15
Yeah. Roll up, grab a few balls in the small bag, go out to the driving range.
Yeah, what's the deal with that, by the way?
What, the
instead of just getting a bucket of balls?
What's the deal with the small bag?
Yeah. There's a Masters thing?
No, they get them. Here's what happens. So if you play, let's say when you go to a tournament, let's say you play Titleist Pro V1s.
Okay.
You get to hit, they give you Titleist Pro V1s at the practice range. So those are divided up into bags.
Okay.
So like if you play Callaway Softs, they throw, so the golf ball manufacturers will give the range a zillion golf balls. And then the player, the caddy goes up to get the balls and he says, we play Bridgestone. And they give him a bag of Bridgestones. So that's what they do.
So, I mean, are these balls just hit once and then
It depends.
Discarded? Like tennis balls?
They might now, yeah. They might now. When I was younger in high school, I went to the U.S. Open in Brookline, Massachusetts, and I remember seeing them sorting out. They had like three or four volunteers sorting out the golf balls that were picked up after they hit them. So they might, yeah. But you know, like,
are you doing the air quotes when you say volunteers?
Volunteers, sorting.
Oh, we put two in here, one in my pocket. Two over here, one in my pocket.
right, exactly. But you know, when we go to the range, it's so funny when we go to the range and we get golf balls.
The little red stripe across it.
Yeah, those things are rocks. I mean, they are stones. I mean, they are terrible. Most of us just hit to hit. But I always tell better players, like, that's not where you go to get your distances and because you're not hitting the same ball. If you are a premium golf ball player, even as an amateur, it is apples to lug nuts. You know, that's how different these two things are.
Apples to rocks.
I mean, those are rocks. I mean,
yeah.
You know, but these guys want to make sure they hit the ball they play with. So they get to do that. So that's one of the reasons, yeah. But the amount is weird because I know I would want seven or eight of those if I got to play in the Masters. Like if I was some amateur, I'd be like, I'm not leaving here until I know I can hit the ball off the first tee without, you know, whiffing it or hitting it on the ground or duff. Like I would duff my shot if I got an invite to play in the Masters right now at my skill level. I would hit it 10 feet off the tee. I would be so petrified. Oh, God.
They'd be like, now on the tee, Tony D. And I'd be like swinging and be like, dribble, dribble, dribble.
So I topped that.
Yeah, I topped that. Can I get another one?
Yep.
Get another one.
My bad.
My bad. Sorry about that. I have to play it from there. Yeah.
You take your first swing and like, man, look at that ball. Oh, no, that's all the dirt. Yeah. That's grass. Sorry.
No, you know, because when I grew up
ball's
playing.
Still sitting in the divot.
We would just play the ball as it lies, no matter where it was. Like,
right.
The rules, like we, like. You know, when I was a kid, the object was to play quick, right? You didn't want to hold up the people behind you.
Yeah.
So if your ball went out of bounds, you just picked it up and moved it.
And threw it, like, on the fairway, because
that's where you would have hit it anyway, right? So I remember when I was in high school, I played in my first tournament, and I hit the ball out of bounds, and they said, you got to go. Like, we went and found it. It was out of bounds. They're like, you got to go back to the first tee. I'm like, what? They're like, you have to go back to the tee and hit it again. And I'm like, can I just drop it and take a stroke? It's like, I got to walk all the way back there. And yeah, and you have to walk back there with your club, and there's another group on the tee, and you have to hit with, you know, in front of them.
Yeah.
It stunk. I was like, I'd never make it as
See,
a
even
pro.
Now,
these
even
rules stink.
I get nervous, you know, when, like, you know, if somebody shows up to the tee, like, you know, especially usually it happens, like, on the first hole or, you know,
yeah,
the 10th hole when you've made the turn. I get nervous then. I remember one time I went, and there was a bunch of kids who were out there. And they just happened, like, we were teeing off of the 10th hole, and they just happened to be sitting there. And all I kept thinking to myself is, like, God, you know, these are a bunch of, like, 9 and 10-year-olds. If I shank this right now, they're going to let me have it.
Yeah,
and
no
I,
doubt.
I can't, I got to act like I know what I'm doing, and I don't know what I'm doing.
Same thing. Yeah, all the years that I've played, I'm same way. I played a month ago, and I got to the 10th tee, and the local high school golf coach
yes.
had a meeting on that tee area. He had 15 kids, and he's telling them about, all right, we're doing this, and we're going to do this, and he's right there while I drove up to the 10th tee. I literally wanted to just drive to the middle of the fairway
of
and start there.
Of course.
I was like, I'm not hitting in front of these kids. They're going to laugh hysterically when I plop it in the pond over 20 feet to the left of me.
Not only that, but as soon as you hit your shot, you know you're going to hear these words. Now, see, kids, what he did there is
something exactly
I don't want you to do.
Now, he rushed his shot and was trying to hit it as fast as he possibly can. You guys need to slow down your swing. Are you going to be like that guy looking for your ball all day?
You don't need to muscle it.
Good luck, young man.
Let the club do the work.
Yeah, God, it's so bad. Oh, it's so, I know these. And you know what's funny? I hear these guys talk about it all the time. The pros, not so much Phil, but even the younger guys, they still get first tee jitters. If you're a professional golfer
yes.
and you still get first tee jitters, then I can't complain if I get mine
right.
as a guy who plays four times a year. Like, if you're Justin Thomas and you're still nervous on the first tee after hitting 5,000 practice balls that week. I mean, then it's something that never goes away, right? Never?
No, never.
Like, you always have it?
You put it in the same context how, like, some players before a football game or any type of sport, they'll, you know, they may have to use the restroom for
yeah,
issues.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
You know, because, you know, they had a bad breakfast or something.
Right.
Yeah. You see that still happening with professionals. Like, you guys have done this thousands of times, hundreds of times. You've played hundreds of games. How could this possibly be?
That's right. Still there. It's like free throws, right? It's like free throws in basketball. I always say, you know, how could you miss free throws? You've been making them your whole life, and it's the same distance your whole life. But the moment gets to you. The moment gets to everybody when you're sitting there at the line. You know who made the most incredible?
Just to interrupt real quick. Right now they're showing Gary Player taking the ceremonial tee.
Yeah, ceremonial shot.
Okay,
yep.
Does he get nervous?
Yeah, is he nervous doing that?
I mean,
his age?
He's Gary bleeping Player.
Right? Isn't he like 85 years old?
Yes.
Like, I know Jack Nicklaus is 80. Look at Jack Nicklaus walking up to that tee box.
Yeah. I mean, does he get nervous?
Yeah. Good stuff.
Or is he like, guys, I'm Jack.
What are you going to do?
If you don't know
and I'm 80.
Me. Yeah, if you don't know me, you don't belong to be out here.
Ryan Westbrook, former Eagles running back, next on where the NFL is and where it could be going in the second half of the season, next on Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
It's a throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony B and Ron Culver.
Call here on a Throwback Thursday. 1990 is where we're going back to. It's the body bag game, a Monday night affair between the Eagles and the Redskins. Buddy Ryan was the head coach at Philadelphia and basically had said before the game that he would planned on beating Washington so bad they'll be carted off in body bags. 9 Redskin players left that game with injuries. The Eagles scored 3 defensive touchdowns in a 28-14 win. It's one of those memories in sports that it kind of marks a time, right? It's one of those where you say, only here in this moment could you get something like this. You don't get it. You're not getting that in 2020. You haven't gotten that kind of game in where that was just accepted way of football for a very long time, for a long time. So this is one of those mark of time types of memories on Throwback Thursday. Because like I said, you're just not going to get a coach to ever say something like that and then come through as violent as they did. But that's what happened 30 years ago on this date in 1990. In looking at the second half of the season, there's so many interesting developments that's going on with the league right now in terms of teams and what you really think about them and where you really feel they're heading. It's funny because when we looked at the end of when the season was kind of, when this weekend was, should say, was wrapping up, you got a team like Pittsburgh at 8-0. That looks vulnerable, right? Like, okay, look, they don't look like a team that is dominating an 8-0 and, you know, are a favorite to win every game. You get the feeling like against Kansas City or maybe even Baltimore again that they are absolutely vulnerable enough to fall short. The Bills are kind of the same way, even though that win against Seattle, it's not necessarily a statement, but it is a trend in the right direction for them because they were a team that will beat you up if you're bad, but lose to you if you're good. And that's not kind of where you want to go when you head to the postseason as far as going to the Super Bowl. And then you look at the East, the NFC East, and how bad it is. And you look at a team like the Giants at 2-7, right? The only team that they have beaten all year is Washington. That's it. That's the only team they've beaten. And yet them, Dallas, Washington, they're only a game and a half behind Philadelphia in the division. That tie against Cincinnati could be the difference. When it's all said, no matter what their records are in terms of winning that division. And it would be just like 2022, and I know it would be in 2021, but it would sort of count, that one of the teams that emerges pulls off like some major upset in the playoffs. I would not be shocked at that at all, right? Even though we should be. Like if a team like Dallas limps into the playoffs through to some sort of massive attrition, and they get into the postseason and they pull off a first-round upset over like Tampa Bay or something. I mean, it'd be crazy. But it wouldn't be that unexpected given where we're heading in the NFL. But look at the team like Green Bay at 6-2, right? I mean, I love the Packers. I think the Packers are fine. Okay, are they the favorites in the NFC right now at the halfway point? Are they more favored than the Saints who have won 5 in a row? Are they more favored than Seattle, even though they lost to Buffalo, but Russell Wilson has still got these sort of MVP-like numbers, even though he didn't have a very good game against the Bills? And what about Arizona? I mean, how many of you are really buying into Arizona yet? I mean, you should. Don't get me wrong. You should. Because of the extra playoff team, I look at this and say, okay, get in. I don't care how you do it. Get in and then let the chips fall where they may. And that's the Cardinals. Right? The Cardinals could use probably some seasoning at certain positions, probably a little bit more of this or that. I mean, losing to Miami is not a terrible loss, but, you know, it's not a great loss. It's not an expected loss. But get in. And what about the Rams? So you look at this landscape of the NFL. I think there's, when you add a playoff level, when you add a playoff team, we did this in baseball, now we're doing it in the NFL. Right, it opens up a lot of questions. It opens up a lot of possibilities. And we adjust because as fans, because sometimes we see a team, like, let's take the Browns, for example, at 5-3. The Browns are third in their division and in all likelihood will finish there. Right? Maybe they make a run and win a lot of their games to close out the season. But Baltimore is going to be a tough out for everybody, and the Steelers likely will be the same way. Before, you'd have to go, wow, the Browns, that third team in that division, they better hope nobody in the other divisions are in second place right on the edge of getting a division title. But now with the extra playoff game, you can go, well, yeah, put them in the conversation. We're not talking about Jacksonville or Houston or Denver or the Chargers or the Jets. So we're not talking about any of those teams. So yeah, the best of the rest, the midfield of the of these divisions. Yeah, why not put them in the same conversation? And we and you know, I was we were talking earlier to Jason Cole earlier this week, and I think he made a very good point. We do like to deal in absolutes. And when we talk about a team like Tua, a player like Tua or whatnot, it's the same way. Let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Brian Westbrook, former running back for the Eagles in a season with the San Francisco 49ers, joins us on our guest line. How are you, Brian?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. And Brian is with us with Crown Royal. Crown Royal believing it's a, being a royal fan this season means staying safe, generously supporting your community, and drinking responsibly, right, rooting for your team. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing with Crown Royal this weekend.
Well, you know, I think it's been a really huge week for Crown Royal, and really just a couple of years of great performance from Crown Royal, because they've initiated a whole program called the Crown Royal Water Boy Program. And what this is all about is making sure that the great fans of the NFL can enjoy the entire game day experience. And it's about hydrating. It's about making sure that, you know, you can certainly enjoy your wine, your spirits, those types of things, your alcoholic beverages. But we want you to enjoy the entire experience. And that means the pregame stuff during the game as well as after the game. And in order to be able to do that, you need to hydrate. And so Crown Royal has pushed the initiative to drink a bottle of water in between your drinks, and then go from there and then be able to enjoy the entire day and stay hydrated and things like that. And it's been a great initiative throughout the last couple years.
All right, Brian Westbrook again joining us here on Wake Up Call. Let's look ahead. Let's look at the season that has happened and the season that is yet to come. And I have to start with the division that you're familiar with, the NFC East, especially the Eagles. What's going on with all four teams there?
You know, the NFC East has been a mess this entire season. It's been up and down. The Eagles have been good in quarters and in half, not for an entire game, but you also can say the same for almost every other team in the division. They've been good in spurts, but they haven't been really good for an entire game, and they haven't been able to put an entire game together, offense, defense, and special teams-wise. And so, as you look at this division, we're talking about the best of some of the worst teams in the league right now. And in order to go out there and as far as winning the division, you probably don't necessarily have to have a winning record to be able to win this division because the teams haven't been very good. The thing that most of these teams, we're talking about Washington, Dallas, New York, as well as the Eagles, have to focus on, they have about 8 games left, and now they have to find a way to get their stride and find their way into getting into a rhythm. That's what November football, December football is all about, getting into a rhythm so that when the playoffs come around, you hit the ground running that first game because, of course, the winner of the NFC East will get a home game.
In terms of being a player in this league and knowing how the season goes, it's a short season, but yet it's still long enough to sort of change the direction. Do you feel like we know a lot about all of these teams, or does the second half and what you can do in the second half change the perspective of a team greatly?
Well, yeah, I think you can learn a lot about these teams and the desire to play, their desire to win. I mean, just imagine, some of these teams are going to have new quarterbacks next year. They're going to have a whole new situation, and the coaches are now looking at the players around some of those positions to see if those are the types of players that you're going to want to have on the team in the future. I mean, if you take a team like the Giants, they're competing. I mean, they are competing every week. They haven't won a bunch of games, but they are competing. That means that the players are responding to Joe Judge. Same thing in Washington, and the guys down in Dallas have to figure out a way to respond better to their coaching and then get better play from some of their leaders down there. And so, these teams are learning a lot about their players, even though they may not be in a big-time winning push at this time, but they're also learning a lot about the players and the guys that they'll have in their roster in the future.
Brian, are you surprised that a quarterback like Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, even in a short sort of resume of Tua Tagovailoa, they are starting to look like they belong in the league? Is that a surprising outcome for these guys that are just in this league?
Well, listen, quarterbacks in college have gotten better and better and better coaching, and a lot of the game plan and the schemes that are used in the NFL are certainly used in college as well. And so those quarterbacks are already coming into the NFL with a lot of prior knowledge of what the offenses are looking at and what they're trying to get accomplished. And so I'm not a hugely surprised that those guys are having success. The other thing, and I'll leave two out of this part of the conversation, Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert, I mean, look at the guys that they have around them.
Yeah.
Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, those are two big-time receivers out there in L.A. And, of course, Austin Eckler, hopefully he gets healthy quickly, is a very good running back. When you look at Cincinnati, Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins, A.J. Green, they had Gio Bernard, Joe Mixon. I mean, they have weapons around him, around both of those guys that are critical to their success. And you can see why they've been successful offensively, even though they haven't won a bunch of games, but they've been successful offensively, both of those young quarterbacks. And what we've seen from Tua these last 2 weeks is important to me. You know, we've seen his team pick it up. And that's telling to me in a way that, you know, the guys around him understand the excitement that he's going to bring, understand the meaningfulness that his presence is to their football team. So the last couple of weeks, what has the defense done? They play much better. They played to a point where they're getting turnovers, pick six, a touchdown every single week. That's impressive. Tua hasn't had to carry the entire load. And then last week we saw Tua, as far as his ability to move the pocket, he's still able to run the ball. And he looked to me quicker than he was in college. But he's able to run. He's able to be very accurate in the pocket. And when he was on the move, throwing the ball, he was deadly accurate as well. And when you're smaller, Drew Brees comes to mind. When you're smaller, accuracy is key. And we saw that Tua has been very accurate so far in his NFL career.
All right, a couple of seconds before we let you go. Your thoughts on tonight's game between Tennessee and Indianapolis. A guy like Derrick Henry, a running back like him, and a Colts defense that has done a very good job this season.
Well, yeah, you know, the Colts defense has played well. And obviously last week was kind of an outlier, and that offense of the Ravens is hard to deal with. But Derrick Henry, you know, and I've seen Derrick Henry play since he was in high school, and worked his way through Alabama and continues to dominate. He's a volume back and big guy. And this is kind of the part of the season where he starts to take off just a bit. And he started earlier this year having great games. But this is normally the part of the season where he starts to take off, where defenders are dinged up a little bit and, you know, they have some injuries and the season gets long and your body gets tired. And that's when defensive players have to make the decision, how much do I want to tackle 6'4", 6'3", 6'4", 250 pounds. How often do I want to, you know, step in front of that and go and try to win that down? And it's hard to do when you're a cornerback or a safety or even a linebacker that's not as big as the running back that's coming at you with the ball. And so Derrick Henry usually gets going at this time of year, and I wouldn't expect anything different. That offense is built on the run game and play action pass. Tannehill has been good throwing the football down the field, but it's predicated on Derrick Henry in that run game getting going early. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him go for some heavy yards. Maybe not this week against this Colts defense, but the following week after that for sure.
Two-time Pro Bowler, member of the Philadelphia Eagles Hall of Fame, Brian Westbrook joining us. Really appreciate it, and thank you so much, Brian. Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
You got it. Brian Westbrook on our Progressive guest line. Quote, buy and save on home insurance with Progressive's new Home Quote Explorer, only at Progressive.com. More thoughts on the NFL heading into Week 10 as we continue with Wake Up Call.
Yo, VIP. Let's kick it.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
The body bag game 30 years ago, 1990. We got, of course, have Vanilla Ice in there.
You know that they were rocking this in the locker room.
You know it.
Before and after.
This hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Ready for a new loan? Rocket can. All right. Every time we bring up Vanilla Ice, it reminds me of my favorite Vanilla Ice line from his Behind the Music. When his manager said, I used to laugh at this, we went from selling out arenas to not being able to book Knott's Berry Farm in 6 months.
Yeah, that's impressive.
That's because that's how far he fell. I'm sorry, I don't want to mean, I mean, he's, did you know he invested in real estate in South Florida and became a multimillionaire?
Yeah,
just on that
he's
alone?
Fine. He's fine.
He, like, people don't know this about him. He took his money And he saved a lot of it, but he also turned it into real estate investment. And just on that alone, he became a multimillionaire.
He played Tom Sawyer in an Adam Sandler movie.
Oh, he did. Mark Twain. Mark Twain. That's right.
Who wrote Tom Sawyer?
That's right.
No, he played Mark Twain. So, like a very cool, hip Mark Twain.
I just read I think The Ringer had a whole Vanilla Ice go back in time piece. Robert Van Winkle. And he was actually, he did the motocrossman, but then got into jet skiing or jet ski racing. And he actually got pretty good at it.
Yeah.
One time he was ranked in the top 15 in the world.
Whenever he puts his mind to it, he's going to do great things.
He's going
to
do great things.
That's just Vanilla Ice.
I can hear people out there going, yeah, it's easy to make millions in real estate when you have millions to start with. I get it. I know.
Of course.
He didn't buy like a piece of land for 10 bucks and then now is making 100 million.
You know what? Do we fault him for investing wisely?
No. Exactly. How many artists have no money? Like blow all their money and sell their rights away and all that other stuff.
Think of a similar artist during that time, MC Hammer.
MC Hammer, right? Where Arsenio Hall said, "You got to save some of this money, man."
Yeah.
Arsenio Hall said in his 30 for 30, the Behind the Music, he said he was a friend, but I gave him my number. I should have given him my number to my accountant.
Yes.
MC blew all of his cash.
All of it.
All right, Master's still in a delay as we continue along this afternoon, but the Jake Asman Show is coming up next. That is not in delay. Thanks for joining us on Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.